Now, I think it's fair to say Stuart Lee, talking for Sunshine. Stuart Lee is a serious-minded writer and comedian. He is sometimes abrasive, sometimes controversial, never more so than with his hit show Jerry Springer the Opera. But he's back on television with some more outings for his comedy vehicle. It started this Wednesday on BBC Two. So this, for people who haven't seen this, it's largely you doing stand-up in a club or with an audience with other bits and bobs around it.
There's not many bits and bobs. It's me talking for about 24, 25 minutes. Then there's about 3 minutes of interview cut in and about 2 minutes of film, and then it's over.
So the interview is Amanda Iannucci, the comedy producer, sort of quizzing you about, why no jokes?
I just asked him to sort of pick on me in a room for 6 hours, and then we made all the inserts out of it. Partly because, I think, in the first series, I was sort of looking at what people said about it, and I think that being on television as a comic confers a kind of status on you.
Yes.
So that when you make a rude comment or a criticism of someone, it seems less heroic than it does when you're doing it in a room to people live. You know what I mean? Because you kind of look like an authority figure. So what I said to Armando basically was, try and do everything you can to make me seem incompetent and small-minded, and and then we'll cut those in, and hopefully it'll solve the problem of the programme.
Well, you like doing this with your comedy. You'll do something. You also explain why you've done it and why you haven't done something else. You're very interested in the structure and conveying the structure.
Well, it's a sort of another way of doing jokes. It's trying to move where the laugh is. I think a lot of comedy writing, it's about the surprise of the punchline. But I sort of think, what if you put the punchline at the beginning?
Yes.
And then let them enjoy the process by which you got to it sort of backwards, which actually dramatists do a lot.
Yes.
And often, it's only like Dan Brown sort of books where the exciting part of it is, and then what happened was.
Yeah.
Whereas in a piece of literature, you kind of, sometimes the beginning's at the ends at the beginning and you enjoy the process,
So you're more attracted to writing drama or opera or whatever than you still enjoy the process of doing stand-up comedy?
Yeah, I love it. And towards the end of the 90s, I was getting frustrated with things about it. And then I was lucky enough to have opportunities to do other things like bits of theatre, and I wrote a novel and whatever. And then I realised that actually, like it or not, I had to go back and be a stand-up comedian because that was a thing that
you have to do.
So
when you talk about being critical of people, I suppose famously your bits when you, like, you did a thing about Richard Hammond and his car crash.
Yeah.
And then, but in the piece that you do, you first of all say, well, I wish he died, and then you explain, oh no, this is a comment on their kind of comedy.
It was 45 minutes long.
Yes.
So you can't really sum that routine up in a 2-paragraph Daily Mail article.
No.
So, you know.
But you mentioned the Daily Mail in the course of the piece.
Well, I had because they doorstepped me about it on the way into a gig and said, I understand you've said this, and I went, well, yeah, but it's a 45-minute bit, and obviously it's not really possible for you to pricey that in a newspaper and explain all the philosophical nuances of it. Nonetheless, they did that. So what I did, doing at the end of the piece was finishing it, making the point that the audience had got the point I was making, and then saying, so if you're in today from the Daily Mail, don't willfully choose to misunderstand that.
And they did. But you do play with us in that, because there's a very funny line when you explain how you wanted to die, and say, oh no, it's just a joke.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, it is what you also feel. Yeah. So you're sort of taking it onto another level of pretending you've made the joke, but also you're now.
Yeah, well,
saying,
it's a strange thing, that piece. We did it a couple of years ago, and it had a sort of second life when there was this sort of Top Gear scandal about them talking about Mexico.
Yes.
And suddenly my.
Your piece didn't seem so bad anymore. It looked like you were ahead of the game.
The DVD it was on went up to the top of the charts. I'm not ever having sold that well before. And it was. Apparently, it's down to Twitter. I'm not on Twitter, so I don't really know what happens, but. You know, apparently lots of people sort of... So it's interesting that it could do that.
And another bit of yours, I was rooting around on YouTube and that kind of stuff. There was a bit when you sort of had a go at Russell Brand. And I don't know how this all fits in, because then I found another bit when you're being interviewed by Johnny Vegas, who's putting the point to you that you'd misquoted Russell Brand for your point. And you were sort of, I don't know, justifying that you could misquote it for a moment. I don't know, was I part of a whole comedy routine here that you the whole thing, or were, had you been caught out?
Well, I like the idea that you might find a routine funny, but then you might stumble ages later across another unrelated bit that criticises it and explains why it wasn't. You know, that was sort of the idea. I did this bit where I basically made up a quote that Russell Brand didn't say, but did it on stage as if he had said it and did a load of stuff about it.
I must say I found that convincing when I first saw that. I thought you had quoted him correctly. to pursue Johnny Vegas's forensic demolition of you, it was dishonest of you to pretend. Well, then
I think it's also about partly people not know, I like the idea that people don't know who you are as well, and they sort of think, well, what, is he making stuff up or is it true or whatever? And that's another reason, while I can see it's very useful to some people, Twitter I prefer not to get involved with blogging and Twittering because I kind of think I don't, you know, you kind of don't really want people to know who you are. Well, I think certainly if you're an actor, I think it. Well, for example, when I watch Brad Pitt in something, I don't think, oh, Brad Pitt's being Jesse James. I think, oh, Brad Pitt's got a hat on, you know, yes. Because he's such a famous celebrity. You can't kind of get through him to. So, and a lot of the stand-up stuff, it's about pretending to have particular views or taking on particular processes that you perhaps don't.
Yeah.
And if people knew who you were, then they wouldn't buy into it. So.
Right. Well, that's always the interesting about stand-up comedy. A comedian standing is generally saying, "Here I am, and this is what I'm doing." Unless they put on a costume and pretend to be a woman or pretend to be a different thing. But that's so.
Well, although I think everyone takes on a role up to a point. I think you kind of find the things that annoy you about yourself and perhaps amplify them or whatever.
Yes.
You know.
So this week you were doing sort of charity and crisps, a lot about, and your grandfather lives in a nest made out of poppy stems, which I thought that is obviously
that was true.
That is obviously true.
Well, it was.
Until Johnny Vegas can demolish that.
It was made up.
And so what topics come up in
this Wednesday? It's all about whether to live in, whether it's better to live in the city or to live in the country. Uh-huh. And I took an extreme position in favour of living in the city. Which is partly because, having had kids now, you know, you go round and round those arguments with yourself about quality of life and that kind of thing. So, it ends up with a horse committing suicide to avoid having to see an ITV light entertainment programme.
Fair enough. Now, you're also curating, which is the new thing that people now do. You're creating a weekend of comedy at the South Bank.
We're all curators now.
Yes. the verb curating has now come into being, but it's not recognised by many dictionaries yet. But Stuart Lee's Austerity Binge is part of the Festival of Britain. So,
I didn't know that.
You weren't alive at the time of the Festival
of
Britain.
Well, I know, and I didn't know this was Festival of Britain. They said, "Can you do this thing?" And I went, "Yeah." And then I realised they were favouring all things that were vaguely... British, which is what it's comedy and music, which is why I think there's a preponderance of quite a lot of folk music in it as well. There's four music gigs and two comedy gigs.
Do they relate back? Is the Austerity 1953 or 51? Whatever.
My promoter thought of the title, because all the titles I wanted kept getting rejected by Jude Kelly. So at the South Bank Centre. So, but Austerity Binge, I think so. It's the idea, but also it fits in with now. Yeah. It's got an interesting thing about the comedy. Actually, we're doing a night. At last, the 1981 show, which is I've tried to sort of program lots of people that were doing, what was then alternative comedy before it sort of broke big. Which, for the sake of argument, was 1982 with the Young Ones and the Comic Strip Presents and stuff. And so it's sort of gone back to people that were on all those early bills in London, all the punk poets.
Yeah. So who have you got on?
Alexis Sale, which is the first time he's done anything like that for a while. Nigel Plain is doing Neil, the folk singer. John Cooper Clarke, Frank Chickens, Arthur Smith, The Greatest Show on Legs, Andrew Bailey, Arnold Brown, Pauline Melville.
Yeah, I know all those. I was performing at that time.
Well, I know you were.
But the call to me obviously got interrupted.
Well, that's because you don't fit the historical narrative. I've taken a Michael Gove syllabus position on it.
And I've been written out. That's it. But okay, if you can get Alexis Sale to perform the way he did in those early days, who was fantastic.
Well,
bursting out of himself. Yeah,
I don't think he'll do that.
No,
he's hosting part of it. Yeah, but I mean, I was on the phone to him yesterday and he was talking about what he might do. So I think it'd be really interesting. But it's not like some morbid retrospective sort of thing. The idea is half the people on the bills are all still working, you know. But I think it'll be a really great night.
And what about any more operas in any more Jerry Springer? Well, any more controversial, be attacking religion or TV or the other gods of our age?
Well, we just had a conversation about doing a new piece, and so we might do that. And I think with
Top
all
Gear,
that
the opera.
No, not so. I think it'd be weirdly. I think it'd be about stand up, and because we tried it before, but we did it in Germany in German.
Yeah,
Where they don't have any stand-up comedy really, and also
Hemingway,
he's just been on this morning on Radio 4. Yeah, so we're talking about doing that, and I think stand-up's probably got to the level now where everyone's sick to death of it, so it's probably time to do an opera about it.
You know. Okay, well, thank you very much, Stuart Lee. That's all the loose ends tied up for this week. Thanks to everybody, Stuart Lee, Neil Strauss, Joetel Ejiofor, Aloe Black, and Avery Sunshine, Emma Freud, and Emma Kennedy. I'm Clive Evans. Next week, my guests will include Sarah Lancashire and Anita Dobson. Until then, from me for now, goodbye.